This is a Sports Radio 740 podcast on sportsradio740.com. Sports Radio 740 brings you ESPN college football analyst Tom Luganville. Brought to you exclusively by Riverbank and Trust. Their service runs deep at Riverbank and Trust with convenient locations in Montgomery, Prattville, Wetumpka, Millbrook, Gadsden, Auburn, and Opelika. Now, here's ESPN's Tom Luganville on Sports Radio 740.
Hey, yes, sir. Our friends at Riverbank and Trust. Check out My River Checking or their Vintage Checking. Both come with the ease of mobile banking and online banking from River Bank and Trust. Tom Luganville joining us here this morning. Saturday night, he was in Starkville for Alabama and Mississippi State. Luges, good morning. How you doing today?
Good morning to you guys. I'm fantastic.
Tell us, first of all, from your vantage point, and I love the part where you were on camera showing everybody just how noisy it was by trying to pick up clapping out there. Great atmosphere, college football, two teams playing their hearts out. What did it come down to, Tom? How did Alabama pull out that victory? What were the keys?
To be honest with you, it came down to, I think, ego and poor decision-making on behalf of Todd Grantham, the defensive coordinator at Mississippi State. Mm. He had such a good plan for that matchup. They were able to, for the most part, stop the run. They were able to pressure Jalen Hurts throughout the game and maybe get Alabama off schedule a little bit. And then all of a sudden at the end, within the last 2 minutes, your mindset is, okay, well, make Alabama earn it. Don't give them anything easy. And on 3rd and 15, Mississippi State decides to go cover zero, all-out blitz, and go one-on-one versus Calvin Ridley. Well, if you're going to do that, you better be better than the opponent, and Mississippi State's not better than Calvin Ridley. So you get the easy conversion there. Then on the very next play, they do the exact same thing, and now they isolate Devontae Smith, who may just be a true freshman, but he's better than the corner of Mississippi State. They throw the slant again and just give Alabama the simple read, the easy throw, instead of maybe just sitting back, rushing three or four, keeping the ball in front of you, and at the very worst, forcing a field goal. I thought it was very poorly called by Mississippi State at the end of that game, and that was the difference.
Luges, what'd you think about Alabama's offensive line play Saturday night?
Well, I think that it's not the Alabama offensive line we've seen in recent years. I think they have some youth. They're still trying to work through some pieces. I want to give Mississippi State, though, a lot of credit. That is a really good unit in the defensive front seven. Jeffrey Simmons is as good a defensive tackle as there is in the league. He's up there with Deron Payne. He's that type of guy. So knew it was going to be difficult for Alabama to move him considerably. You know, they had their moments. I think that with as much pressure as Mississippi State brought, I really felt that they did all they could, and then Jalen Hurts had to make some plays. And I'll say this, too, guys, aside from the offensive line, and I know that Jalen Hurts gets a lot of criticism, and I think it's getting to the point where it's becoming unfair. And I say that because this guy is making play after play after play on critical downs, in critical moments of the game, and he's not just doing it with his legs. He's made huge strides in the passing game, and he won that game the other night on that last drive with his arm, not his legs. And I think we've got to start acknowledging that doesn't winning trump everything?
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
Right. Okay. Good. I'm glad we all agree on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is that cures a lot of problems out there. In the post game, you were talking with Nick Saban, and he said there's some things we got to clean up. Mostly, I thought he meant missed tackles and stuff like that. If you were looking for things for Alabama to clean up, what would jump out at you besides offensive line play?
Yeah, he knew, whether it was offensively or defensively, I think he knew coming into the game that with their youth and some inexperience at linebacker, they were going to have to really dumb down the game plan because the linebackers are the communicators of that defense. And when you don't have a Sean Dion Hamilton, you don't have a Mac Wilson, and guys that have been there and taken all those reps and lined everybody up and gotten everybody in position, you're going to have some mental errors. and you're probably going to be caught out of position. We saw that because Mississippi State was able to do a lot of misdirection, get those linebackers to commit what I call eye violations, and then use that against them. And I think that's why Mississippi State was able to run the ball fairly well. So I think that Coach Saban's probably talking about identifying little technical things. And with each and every rep of those young guys, like a Dylan Moses, they're going to get better and better and better. But I think they knew going into the game that there would be some struggles, that there would be some glaring holes that stood out, and that's exactly what happened. But to Alabama's defense, guys, they never had the ball in the first half. I mean, it was a brilliant game plan by Mississippi State. They let the clock go down to 2 or 3 seconds on every snap, and once that punt and the penalty on the first drive for Mississippi State happened, that flipped field position in the Bulldogs' favor, and again, it kept the ball out of Alabama's hands. So they didn't have a lot of opportunities on offense in the first half.
You know, you see, to me, it seems like you see a pretty good drop off, Luges, with at the linebacker position at Alabama. Keith Holcomb just doesn't seem to be the guy that has been in that position over the last couple of years, even earlier this year in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, you know, he's a really good player that probably is best suited in a reserve role where he complements everybody else, where he doesn't have to be the lead dog, where he's not, taking charge of the defense. And listen, that's fine. Everybody has their role and has their piece of the puzzle. I think what we've got to acknowledge here is we're on the downside of the season. Everybody has injuries. This isn't exclusive to Alabama. Heck, Mississippi State was missing 4 of their starting receivers. I had Wisconsin the week before. They're banged up. Everybody's banged up. The thing that's glaring about it with Alabama is they've been relatively lucky when it comes to injuries impacting them late in the season. They haven't had devastating injuries to guys in years past, at least off the top of my head, where you say, oh, man, you know, you lose this guy, and now all of a sudden everything changes. Well, now they've lost multiple guys, and they're human like everybody else. You're going to see a bit of a drop-off.
I love the term eye violations. When you're in the shopping center with the little lady and some girl walks, you don't want to commit eye violations, fellas.
No.
Well, listen, that's why you got to keep your sunglasses at hand at all times. You got to make sure that you do the eye twitch as far as the full neck tilt.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have a game plan now. You got to go in with a blueprint of knowing how you're going to execute this thing.
Tom Luganville is with us, ESPN. Was there any level of surprise to you at the outcome and the nature of the Auburn-Georgia game?
There was not necessarily a surprise, aside from it being in such dominant fashion. But what happened for Alabama was the perfect recipe for success. I wrote a piece about 3 weeks ago for the All-American about Georgia's success on offense and why they've been able to do it with a true freshman quarterback. And the focus of the piece was, at the time, Georgia was leading the conference in rush attempts per game. They were 3rd in the nation, only behind 2 service academies in rush attempts per game. They were like 5th in the nation in 3rd and 4 or less. So essentially, the whole focus was, they've never put their quarterback in a hole. They were always in manageable situations on 3rd down. The defense would load up the box to stop the run because they were so concerned, which for a true freshman quarterback means you're going to have a lot of one-on-one coverage and you don't have to work through progressions and decipher a lot of things that might be above your pay grade as a freshman. So if you look to what Auburn did, Auburn completely flipped the script. They won on 1st and 2nd down. They then were able to get Georgia in obvious passing situations, 3rd and long situations, and at that point, that took Georgia out of their game because it put the game on the quarterback's shoulders, which you do not want on the road against a good football team. And you can go back, if you just run through the play-by-play of each and every series. This was a game in which there were eight straight Georgia possessions that ended in a punt or on downs. There were 6 straight Georgia possessions in the first half that accumulated just 35 yards. And there were multiple 3rd and 7-plus situations where Georgia did not convert. And that's how the game played out, because the game was put into the quarterback's hands for Georgia, and that's exactly what Kevin Steele and Auburn want.
And I just thought Auburn's play on the offensive and defensive line, Lugs, was just spectacular. I mean, Georgia had no answer.
No, and I don't know if Andrew Thomas has blocked Jeffrey Holland yet, and the game was 2 days ago.
Yeah. I'm with you.
All right, give us a perspective on this since the hammer drops yesterday in Knoxville. How attractive is the Tennessee job, Tom?
I think the only thing that prevents me from calling it a great job is that you do not have your own stable of players in-state year in and year out to fuel an entire recruiting class. And what I mean by that is, unlike Alabama or Georgia or Louisiana or Texas or Florida, where you could put 17 to 20 guys every single class right out of your own state, Tennessee has to go into everybody else's backyard. They have to infiltrate Georgia and Alabama and Florida with all of their competitors. They're probably going to be, at best, signing between 4 and 6 in-state guys a year, and think about the challenges that presents. Now, that's the only downside I see. It's got a tremendous fan base. It's got a tremendous alumni base, fantastic facilities, great academic support services for their student-athletes. I think their fan base needs to understand that Butch Jones may have been fired because he could not beat ranked teams. They could not win close games. But they also need to give Butch Jones credit for what he did with that program, where was it when he took it over. And I could venture a guess that whoever takes over the Tennessee job may have a better nucleus to work with than whoever takes over the Florida job. And it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But I'm curious to know what Tennessee does, because they've gone to the Group of Five well twice with Derek Dooley, now Butch Jones. So you got to figure they're probably going to stay away from that this time. Well, then where does that leave them? Because a great coach at a great program right now is not leaving their program to go to Tennessee. So it's going to be interesting to see how they narrow down their options.
Why am I hearing the name John Gruden?
Because he was a GA in 1941 and apparently it doesn't matter that he's not coached college football in 30 years, and it doesn't matter that he hasn't coached any football in almost 8 or 9 years now. So
you were listening to our show earlier today, because I said the exact same things. I can't figure out the love fest for Gruden. I mean, I like Gruden, but...
Yeah, I do too. And here's the challenge that people don't realize. Never had to recruit, certainly not this day and age, which is a royal pain in the you-know-what. Yes. And then maybe more so than anything else, because he is such a grinder from a work ethic standpoint, he would lose his mind with the 20-hour rule, where you can only work with those kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, he would be going crazy. Where's our team? Why are they not here watching tape? Why are we not meeting? Why are we not on the field? Well, coach, we can only spend 2 hours a day with him. What? There's no way.
That's a great point.
If it does happen, he'll drive himself mad and he'll be out of there.
That's a good point. All right, Luke, where are you going to be? I know you got some double duty again this week.
Yeah, man, all month long. So tomorrow night I'll be Akron and Ohio at Akron. If Ohio wins, they win the division after thrashing Toledo last week, and we'll go to the MAC championship game. If Akron wins, Terry Bowden will find himself with another bowl-eligible season. He's done a remarkable job there. And then this weekend I've got Oklahoma at Kansas. Mm. So I would imagine that will turn into a college football studio show for our crew for at least two quarters.
Thank you, Tom.
Always good. Tom Luganville on our Dreamland Barbecue guest hotline, brought to you by our good friends at River.